Well, it's great to have the chance to address you today. I'm delighted and baffled by all this high technology here that's helping us out today. But I have been associated with the SEEP project since 2006, and SEEP actually began in about 2003. And if you have any background with kind of the genesis of it, it really came out of some scrutiny that our agency had from the office of OMB, some questions about the way we record progress. I'll go into that in my presentation in the next few minutes, and how we can move from describing progress in terms of widgets or counting some of our practices to talk really about the environmental outcomes and the benefits of what these practices are and do. So that's my intent, is to give you an overview. I've been charged with both describing a little bit of the SEEP effort, give you some of the background. I also want to give you an overview with the other components, because pasture land, the literature synthesis that you will hear in more detail from each of the authors today, I want to give you some sense of how that exists within the framework of the SEEP efforts that include rangeland, watersheds. There's national modeling efforts as well. So this is just one element, albeit a very important one and a unique one, as NRCS has asked the scientific community to tell us what's the new science, what's the new technology, what ought we be doing. Ah, great, it works. So the original objectives were these: just to quantify and establish this scientific understanding of conservation practices, the particular focus looking at the watershed scale, realizing that so much of the early work had been field scale work, and then trying to estimate these conservation effects and benefits at regional and national scales. The citation here, there was a special edition of the Journal of Soil and Water Conservation last summer that was focused on SEEP, and this paper, Duranchik et al., contained a description of the past 5 years of SEEP from which these goals were taken. The vision for the future, captured in another paper again that last summer, this idea of moving to enhanced natural resources and healthier ecosystems, and looking at a more effective management of ag landscapes, moving away from kind of our orientation at the initiation of the Soil Conservation Service, which we were in the 1930s, now we're the NRCS in the 1990s. So we would like our practices to reflect a more holistic and a more integrated view of the resources that we are making recommendations upon. And then this future goal, trying to enrich conservation planning and implementation, our management decisions and policy. These are some of the activities within SEEP, and the bibliographies and literature syntheses are a crucial element of the framework of SEEP. The bibliographies have been out now for several years, at least in the case of across all of the technical specialties, by which I mean the grazing lands bibliography is now to be found at this URL through the National Ag Library. We have these different assessment efforts. The first one, really, the first emphasis has been cropland, grazing lands. Again, we got a little bit of a slow start since I didn't begin staffing this until 3 years after the began in 2003. Wetlands and wildlife, we have technical specialists there in Beltsville who work with me, and I'll describe a little more of some of their efforts. But wetland is looking at broad regions of the United States, looking at integrated landscape models that would talk about ecosystem service benefits. Wildlife is commissioning different studies. I'll go into more detail here in a few minutes on that as well. The bibliographies, again, they have a home at the NAL. They're not only in their completed form that you can access through the internet, but the dynamic versions are a particularly useful feature, with the search strings that they put together allow you to follow the strings, rerun it against the databases, and essentially update the bibliography in its modern format. The national assessments, I want to show a couple examples here. I'm really indebted for some of the illustrations I used today to our whole team there in Beltsville. We have our SEEP coordinator, Lisa Duranchik, who manages not only the watersheds, but across all of our specialties, as well as a nice staff of GIS specialists. So I borrowed liberally from some of the illustrations that they've created in my presentation today. The graphic you see in the upper right-hand corner here shows some of the regions of interest for wetlands, particularly looking at where they're going to use the integrated landscape model for ecosystem services. In the lower right corner here, you begin to see some of the river basins in which the cropland modeling effort hopes to soon report out on the effects of the nutrient and sediment as they are affected by the conservation practices put in place. They all make heavy use, as will the pasture land effort, of the National Resource Inventory, what we call NRI, which is a way the NRCS reports back to Congress on changes in land use. And I'll go in again to more detail on the NRI relevance to some of our national assessment work. The pasture land literature synthesis, this is the subject of this afternoon, it was commissioned to try to look at the core, what we call the core practices. There are something over 170, 180 practices the NRCS makes use of nationally in our field office technical guide. It wouldn't be possible to ask, we've asked the authors enough to focus on these core practices across the whole range of soil, water, air, plants, animals. But in this case, we asked them to look at these. They can use the bibliography as a starting point, but we realize they have access to data well beyond that. And we've asked them to examine this against the published literature with the expectation that these reports will be absorbed to augment our conservation planning activities, our technical standards, and to contribute to the evolution of our conservation practices. We believe that the new trends in science can be matched up with our professional expertise in the field, that there's a certain degree of science and art when it comes to working with landowners in the field, that the gaps in literature that may be found through this effort will stimulate new research and new funding for that research, and that we would have an increased appreciation for ecosystem services provided by the pastureland landscapes, that this would help drive our planning process. And all of our seat managers in Beltsville and D.C. have been very happy with the high caliber of the scientists associated with this pastureland effort. There's an excess of 20 scientists involved here with literature syntheses. There's more than 60 on the pastureland side, and that doesn't count all of those who are working on some of the models. I want to address just briefly this idea of a conservation practice physical effects matrix. In the past, perhaps through the influence of all of our engineers, we tried to describe the influence of our practices through a massive matrix with the 170 practices listed on one axis and then across their purported benefits on soil, water, air. But unfortunately, it was a very qualitative endeavor. It was, in fact, it would say, we think that this grazing management has a beneficial effect or no effect or deleterious effect. Nothing more than that. Rarely, if ever, quantified our expectation and hope for SEEP is that we can begin to put some muscle behind these just very qualitative ratings. And then in the past, we would again talk about the purported benefits that would help us in the formulation of alternatives for the landowner, and that, as again, in a voluntary context to which the NRCS delivers conservation, that we would have them choose from the alternatives and then look at the mix of conservation incentives that they can use to support that. We have a new factor in that the RCA, the Soil Water Resource Conservation Act, is a snapshot report that Congress has obliged us to give to them. The next one is going to be submitted in 2011, but it will occupy our agency all through 2010, and indeed many of their results need to be completed by late spring of next year. Some of the SEEP results will begin to fuel the data required for the Resource Conservation Act. I thought I would point a little bit to the way our chief recently testified to a subcommittee of Congress. I thought it might be illustrative to you to look at the way he described the changing conservation ag environment and put it in perspective. Over the last 12 years, he noted that some of the new programs that NRCS delivers today had just begun. EQIP, for example, many of us are used to EQIP, which was initiated back then. Initially, $170 million a year was all that was associated with it. 1996, you got these new programs, the FRPP, Farm and Ranch Land Protection, WHIP, just came about. They were funded relatively low levels at $35 and $50 million. But from 1996 to 2002, you had these conservation investments increased by more than $17 billion over the previous baseline of spending. EQIP now receives over $1 billion in annual spending. FRPP and WHIP greatly expanded. You had CSP come out. EQIP in the past was a program that would help repair problems in the landscape. CSP was actually to reward those managers and farmers, ranchers who were doing a good job. Really a different orientation to it. And the 2008 Farm Bill not that long ago it was passed, increased the baseline by another $4 billion. So that today, as the chief reported to the Congressional Subcommittee just last month, we have more than 20 conservation programs and initiatives with an annual budget of more than $3 billion. And then again, my 34-year career, that's a substantial change from where we began at a small field office in the old days. And that means, too, that we are getting this increased scrutiny from the Office of Management Budget. And when we talk about what he reports, here's an example of what he reported to them, that we had applied conservation plans and system, 328 million acres, that EQIP had been applied 145 million acres. We'd entered into 313,000 EQIP contracts, which, by the way, is part of the reason our people have trouble to get to the field anymore, because they're so busy with these large number of contracts. The creation and restoration of wetlands, 2.7 million acres, 40 million acres of applying comprehensive nutrient management plans. Then the next two have to do with soil maps and web soil survey. Again, these are laudable. These do show an enormous amount of effort. But if you ask, what about the effects upon, say, nutrient loadings in the Mississippi or the Chesapeake Bay, they're somewhat lacking. So the elements of SEEP, we have the national assessment that's going to use this NRI data to begin using modeling on rangeland, pastureland, on erosion models. In the West, SEEP is funding several Ag Research Service labs to accelerate their efforts to develop models that will work on rangeland. They haven't in the past. They will and do work right now. And then the objectives are, again, this measurement of the environmental benefits and the managing the ag landscape for environmental quality. Whoops, wrong button, sorry. Now, the element of national assessment I've just pointed to, the goal of the watershed studies at the watershed scale are as follows. This idea of quantifying the effects at the watershed scale in depth using initially retrospective analyses. The NRCS is not a granting agency. We're not a mini CSR EES, but we have, in fact, had budgets that we've used strategically to try to accelerate efforts of ARS to work with land-grant agencies, land-grant universities. But for watershed work, we looked with those watersheds that had existing data sets. And the idea was, again, trying to enhance the understanding of these effects in a biophysical setting. This is a graphic that tries to show some of the newly developed watershed studies. They're in excess of 40. The three featured here were the three new grazing land studies sponsored through CSR-EES. Again, they're now known as NEFA. And those studies in Texas, out in Arizona and Washington, of which two-thirds of those were sponsored by NEFA, one by the NRCS. But this begins to show the new concentration on studies that have to do with the whole realm of SEEP, but many of these did not focus just on grazing lands. So the key questions, what are the effects of the timing, location, and suites of practices, the interactions among these practices, the socioeconomic factors, and the optimal suite and placement of conservation practices? Many of you may be aware that in past years, if the NRCS was to talk about targeting, then we would sometimes run afoul of those influences that wanted an equal access to conservation programs across the landscape. So targeting for a long time was a word we had to use cautiously, but there's new recognition that our focus upon ranch and farm at the individual level needs to actually worry about the aggregation of those effects, the accumulation of those effects at a watershed level. And the different scales we care about here, national, regional, whereas what are the effects of the policy and program rules that NRCS use on the results and outcomes? We expect our regional assessments and croplands, grazing lands, et cetera, to be relevant to this, and that the SEEP watershed synthesis that Professor Deanna Osmond and others are working on now will also be relevant. If you look at the effect at state and local scale, then we expect to have these specific analyses to affect our conservation planning, the ranking processes through which EQIP is ranked and delivered to different landowners, and the geographic prioritization, which, as I say, has been a problem in the past. To shift gears to talk a little bit about the type of studies that are done in the SEEP underneath my partner in wildlife, this Playa Lakes joint venture, the SEEP Wildlife Study, I wanted to address briefly. to talk about the type of companion studies that are being engaged. Now, one of the reasons that you see wildlife turning to bird studies is that's where the data are. It's they talk about this huge n-dimensional hyperspace within which wildlife lives, but the only ones they really measured very well are some of the big charismatic animals and lots of birds. So here's an example from our sponsorship of these studies looking at the effect of CRP on mixed grass prairie birds, looking at baseline conditions, simulating the removal of CRP, and then looking at these different states. In the lower right corner, you see the geographic area where the study was done. The example for the Dick Sissel bird in that area, a substantial representation of the effects of CRP in excess of 62% of the population supported in Texas by CRP alone. And then finally, looking at through these generation of what we call seed conservation insights, in addition to the literature synthesis, the bibliographies, these specific studies may be digested down into this kind of a insight that we would submit to upper management at NRCS, to other members of the SEEP Steering Committee, other USDA agencies, and so forth. To shift gears and talk a bit about rangelands and pasture land, it's always important to remember that as critical as we may be of how effective our conservation practices and programs are in 2009, we've come a long ways. I could just as easily, this is a picture of New Mexico, 1917, so it predates the SCS. The Forest Service was around, but evidently not in this part of the world. The SCS came about in the 30s, and the cooperative extension, that was their infancy as well. But if we think about the imposition of practices over the last century, we've come a long way. So I don't want to be too hypercritical of the programs as they exist today. I could just as easily have put up another picture showing Hugh Hammond Bennett standing in front of a gullied cropland field that was being changed to pasture land, and he talking about his recommendation for what kind of grass would hold that soil in place for pasture purposes. I'll talk a little here about the kind of data that will be used to quantify both on range and pasture land to give us a better idea for the national assessments. In the case of range, there has been developed a new concept called rangeland health. I won't go into detail other than to say that it's embraced by all of the federal agencies with the exception of the Forest Service, and they're using it clandestinely to describe the health of rangeland across the 20 western states. It has some 17 different indicators, and it looks at different attributes of hydrologic function, biotic integrity, and soil and site stability. For pasture land, you may be interested in that we've started a new program to, again, look in both a qualitative and quantitative fashion to look at the canopy cover, to look at the species composition, ground surface, and to, for the first time, perhaps develop a new data set that allows us not only to look in terms of more rigorous species composition, but also for hydrologic modeling in the East to characterize the structure, the relative proportion of species, legume and non-legume, what's the amount of bare area, if any, in the understory, which is all absolutely necessary for the purpose of hydrologic modeling. Make sure my timer is still working. The states in which we're doing this study for pasture land are the following, with the addition of Massachusetts and New Jersey, and Georgia just came on board this year as well. So we have pilot studies. The green dots in this case represent where NRI has found pasture land. Each dot equals 25,000 acres. Within each of these states, we now have randomly selected points where those protocols I exhibited before are being collected. And this data set has begun to give us some interesting new insights already. And in some states where our specialists had used ocular techniques to say, well, we think there's 30% legumes out there, the line point intercept and the quantifications showed that they were 10 to 15% optimistic in their calculation of the actual percentage of legumes. We also do biomass calculations, so we also have them harvest biomass. For the range world, we have all of these western states. There's a data set of nearly 11,000 data points, again, that allow us to describe with a rigorous statistical pinpointing of not only the bare ground, the species occurrence, invasive species, for example. This all goes into the new models that will talk about erosion on rangeland hydrology. This is a slide some of you may have been seen before showing the transects which allow us to both quantify by looking at line point intercept as well as within this 0.4 acre dimensions describe about invasive species and do a complete plant census. So the products that come out of this for the national assessment for the next year in 2011, you'll see the models begin to predict both hydrologic and wind erosion models begin to give some assessment of the benefits, effects of conservation practices. Occasionally I use the word benefits, but I think it's a more accurate to say the outcomes of the practices. The NRI data is going to be key for this, and that they are going to be configured to support a streamlined NRCS field office decision support system, because all of our field offices are being streamlined to see if we can free them up to spend more time with the landowner and less time worshiping a computer and doing all the contractual arrangements. This is an example of a study that I funded at Colorado State University, Dr. Daniel Muchunas, who's a prolific researcher. Here's databases that will, some of this has found its way into the literature synthesis for rangeland. Again, they're about a year ahead of the pastureland effort. But this survey of bird and rodent responses to grazing at regional scales, very interesting in terms of the relevance of, as we look at prescribed grazing in a rangeland context and the interaction with wildlife species. So as we begin to find some of the findings, in the West at least, they're beginning to encourage us to move away from the traditional calculation of tons per acre of soil loss, which has been traditional for the NRCS and SCS for years, suggesting the hydrologists in the West that we should at least consider a risk assessment where we talk about the chances of unraveling. What would a site do, again, related to cover from that particular ecological site, but a site that's had overgrazing, has poor cover, might have a 1 in 10 risk of unraveling, whereas with good grazing, with better cover, it has a 1 in 100 chance of unraveling, and that all for actually the same kind of combination of soil and plant communities. And after 25 years in the West of having all of USLE and its successors discredited for the way they model rangeland, we now have a model developed that's accurately predicting hill slope erosion can be used for our national assessment. The expectations for SEEP, for rangeland, pastureland, and all of these elements, they're scheduled for completion over the next few months, and you'll hear more about that from the authors who follow me. I see this leading to a new consensus on how the technology that supports our grazingland conservation practices should be applied differently. How might they be tweaked to improve them? We expect our technical standards to be updated from this, our conservation planning recommendations improved, and the programmatic ranking criteria for, again, the $3 billion of assistance that goes out every year to also be bolstered. The outlets for this information include kind of the internal science and technology programs divisions, strategic planning divisions. These are all internal to NRCS, to our national and state technical staff across the 50 states and the 3 regional offices, our conservation partners, including NGOs, the other agencies that cooperate with us on SEEP, land-grant universities, and I don't want to forget OMB, who we're going to be briefing next week, actually. So that's also relevant. Collaboration is the key. These are some of the partners for the SEEP Steering Committee, and this isn't the exhaustive list, but everyone from NOAA, the BLM Forest Service, FSA, Economic Research Service, and others. So with that, I'll bring this to a close to say this is, again, been an overview. I look forward to the opportunity to share with you the results from these different authors on the different conservation practices. And with that, I welcome any questions. Thank you.